promotional fee has been paid by the sponsor of this program. For its editorial content, statements, views, and beliefs expressed by the sponsor do not reflect those of WOKV or Cox Media Group.
The Consumer Law Hour is brought to you by Farah & Farah.
The comments and opinions expressed on this radio program do not constitute legal advice and do not create an attorney-client relationship with you. If you have a legal problem, a formal consultation will be needed outside the confines of this radio program.
Helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing the things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Call 340-1045. That's 340-1045. Now, the Consumer Law Hour with Eddie and Chuck Farah on News 1045 WOKV.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Consumer Law Hour with Eddie and Chuck, sponsored by Fair and Fair. What have you guys been working on this week? How are you doing?
A lot of things.
A
lot of stuff. There's a lot going on in the legal world. We want to talk about the immigration situation and how that applies to the kind of work we do, personal injury, because immigration is in the, everybody's talking about it. Every politician on television has a perspective. It's very polarizing. It's a big topic, as we all know. And but nobody really talks about the legal ramifications of people who are here supposedly illegally and so forth. And we'll get into that. But I did want to bring up something that is a scenario that probably happens a lot of times. It's when people are married and husband and wife or whatever, and the spouse takes out a life insurance policy on the other spouse, and they get a divorce, but the spouse who took out the policy forgets to change the beneficiary because they're divorced and he goes about his life, and then that person dies. Does the person who's on the life insurance policy get the money even though they're not married? And that's come up. It happens a lot. There's a Florida statute on point that says that if there's a legal divorce adjudicated by a court, then that beneficiary is no longer legal. That person does not get the money. So you are kind of protected, or you think you'd be protected, that if you forget to change the beneficiary and you get a divorce, God forbid something happens to you, your former spouse is not going to get the money, right? Because you got this Florida statute that protects you. But there are people who are attacking that statute and saying it's unconstitutional and that they want the money, even though they're divorced, even though they haven't been together for years and years and years, the surviving spouse is saying, I want the money.
How do they argue it's unconstitutional?
Because they're saying it's against freedom of contract. Our Constitution talks about the freedom to contract. And this is a contract.
Yeah, you can revoke it by changing the beneficiary.
Yeah, you should have revoked it. Maybe your intent was to keep them. Maybe because they lived, you were married for so long, you intended to provide for that spouse. So even though the statute gives you a way to void that beneficiary and stop that divorced spouse from getting the money, people have been successful in arguing otherwise.
I think they'll win.
Yeah.
So because, it's how can you determine the intent of a dead person?
Yeah,
you can't.
Exactly.
Unless there's other things, some outside evidence, but really it's going to be hard to overcome that because.
Yeah.
So it's sending a lot of families into legal battles afterwards.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's why you want to make sure, of course, if you do go through a divorce and you've got life insurance policies out there, you want to change the beneficiaries because thinking that this law, Florida statute 732, let me tell you what it says. It's pretty clear. It says any life insurance, given the scenario I was telling you, is void as of the time the decedent's marriage was judicially dissolved or declared invalid by court order prior to the decedent's death. So it's very clear. If the court says you're divorced, then that life insurance policy beneficiary is no longer valid. But it's in black and white. But people have been successful in arguing the constitutional argument that this is against the freedom to contract, which is in the Florida Constitution. So we'll see what happens. That's been in effect since 2012, that statute has, about 6 years now. Fairly new in terms of, cases take, three, 4 years to get adjudicated once they're on appeal. Sometimes it takes a couple of years. So really we'll see how all that is resolved one way or the other. Okay, getting to the immigration. because you know, we deal with it all the time in our practice. We're not immigration lawyers, and we're not politicians, and we're not. But we don't really deal with immigration type issues, except when it comes to personal injury cases. There are basically four categories, statuses. There's citizens like us, permanent residents, these people who have a green card type of thing. Then you got temporary visa holders. I don't know really what that category is. Then there's the undocumented immigrants. And I think that's where everybody's talking about, the undocumented immigrants. Right. Some people say they have no rights because they're here illegally. That's a big argument you hear, or that's the impression you get from people
talking. Or they shouldn't have any rights.
Yeah, or they have rights. They're here illegally. They have no right to be here. But you have to look to the Constitution. I mean, nobody brings that up. The law disagrees with you. If you believe that, you're wrong, because the law says our Constitution guarantees certain rights to all persons or individuals. It doesn't talk about being a citizen. Yeah, if you're a citizen, you have certain other rights.
Right.
But the Constitution carves out a section. It says that people who are persons or individuals have specific rights. Some of those rights are due process, trial by jury, unlawful search and seizure, self-incrimination. All those apply to everybody. You can be here illegally, but you still have a right to due process, trial by jury, you know, the right to protect yourself against self-incrimination, unlawful searches and seizures, and so forth. So just because you were here and you don't have a green card or you came over the border doesn't mean you don't have those rights.
Yeah.
Can you bring a suit?
Yes. That's what they're saying.
That's what we do. I mean, people try to bring up, we have cases, we have people who are undocumented immigrants and they're injured on the job. They file a workers' comp claim or they're involved in an automobile accident. The insurance company wants to bring up the fact that they're here illegally. Under the law, you cannot, it's not relevant to the case. You can't bring it up. You can't talk about it in front of a jury.
They have all the rights equal to a resident or a citizen.
Yeah.
Does that put their status or anything at risk if they do that?
No, it doesn't. It shouldn't, but a lot of people probably feel like...
Yeah, they feel like something's going to happen.
They may get turned in or something like that. And so a lot of them are hesitant.
But to bring claims.
To bring claims.
Wow.
But they have all the rights that anybody else would have. And it's too bad. But
So you can... And the logic behind the insurance companies not being able to bring up the fact that they're here illegally is that it would be so prejudicial to the case that it's not relevant to the issues. Just because if I have a broken arm from a car accident and I'm here illegally, what does that have to do with how the accident happened? Why should the person who caused the accident get a break because I'm here illegally? And that's where that's the logic behind it. And the fact that you make the testimony or the evidence that you're here illegally is so prejudicial that it doesn't allow you to get a fair shake in a court of law. And that's kind of the way it's written. I think it's fair. It works. And that way the law is decided on the facts, not on the collateral issues. Okay. RVs, you know. I mean, we're skipping around a lot here, Candace. Mm-hmm. Today. I'm sorry, but...
Got a lot of topics to talk about. It seems like you've been very busy.
Well, I haven't been here in a few weeks. We've been on Chuck and I have been on vacation for a couple of weeks, so we're trying to get back into it. I know last week we had a couple people from the show, from our office that handled
had
the show.
Had people filling in last week.
Yeah, they did a great job. I heard good things about them, and they enjoyed
doing it. Well, we
missed it.
I'm glad we're back.
Yeah, it's always good to be back on the Consumer Law Hour. But, okay, RVs. There's been a lot of litigation on RVs. We hear about car recalls and, you know, recalls vans and... all those and the typical vehicle being recalled or being tested by the federal government and for its safety and so forth. But you know, RVs kind of are sitting out there on their own, and there are some now recalls going on with RV tires. The Goodyear tire G159 has been recalled, and it's on a lot of RVs because that tire was designed for delivery trucks, not heavy vehicles on the highway. So you need to check your RV. If you have a Goodyear G159, that tire's under recall. Should not be driving that RV.
Wow.
It's caused many deaths over the last several years.
Wow.
Anything about how
it ended up on the RVs? Was it a cost-cutting measure? Or?
I don't know. I don't know.
Wow.
It was just not made for an RV, but it's on a bunch of RVs. Also, you got to be careful about the gross weight rating. These RVs have so many niches to store stuff. You need to look at your tires and see what the maximum weight is. because people load these things up. They put bicycles, motorcycles. I've seen all kind of things on RVs.
Yeah.
And who knows what's inside and these storage bins. So you would always want to check your tire rating and the weight and against the capacity. Another interesting thing, seatbelts. The federal government does not crash test RVs. Okay, we know that. You've never seen a dummy in a crash test with an RV. Vehicles, yes. Trucks, yes. But not RVs. They're not crash tested. Also, vehicles in excess of 10,000 pounds are not required to meet seatbelt standards, which means you probably don't have to have seatbelts in those RVs. And typically, most of these big RVs weigh in excess of 10,000 pounds, so there's no testing for seatbelts. There's no requirement for seatbelts. The other thing is, formaldehyde. In the past, you've heard, in the past years back, in mobile homes especially, formaldehyde is a carcinogen. It's a glue. They were using it in all of these mobile homes. The federal government stepped in and said, you can't have the formaldehyde in the mobile homes anymore. Unfortunately, that didn't apply to travel trailers and RVs. So you want to check before you buy one to see if the manufacturer is still using formaldehyde in your RV.
Yeah.
It's not
those
a good
are good
thing.
Points.
Right. So that. And the reason I bring
this
that
is RV
up,
season.
It is, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Almost 10. I mean, RVs are hot right now, Chip.
Oh, yeah.
Almost 10 million households in the U.S. now have RVs.
Wow.
That's scary to think in 2018 that there still might be formaldehyde in your RV.
Because there's no regulation. I know.
If you buy a used one or,
or
even new ones, you probably.
Could have it.
Yeah.
Because it's only forbidden in. Mobile homes, and these are travel trailers, like RVs or driving the road. So doesn't apply to them.
Yeah.
I don't know why they just couldn't have made it across the board, no formaldehyde anywhere. Maybe they figure, the people who are living in the mobile homes are more exposed to it because they're there, hours and hours at a time. The RVs are only driving it, here and there, maybe. So.
Well, anyway, I mean, it's.
You can still breathe it in and get it.
It's a poison. I think they need to get rid of it.
Yeah.
RVs, who knows what the political, sometimes you split the baby.
Effort.
Yeah. You split the baby in half,
depending on the lobbyist and who's paying the money. Okay. Okay. We'll take a break and come back. I got some other stuff to talk about too.
You've been listening to Consumer Law Hour on WOKV. We're taking a break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Consumer Law Hour on WOKV. Give us a call. The phone number is 904-340-1045. Eddie and Chuck are here to answer your questions. Again, the phone number is 904-340-1045. Give us a phone call right now. And what case were you guys working on or talking about?
There's a case that happened down in Fort Lauderdale near Boca Raton a few years ago. And it has to do with what is the responsibility of the police. I mean, if they investigate something or they're involved in something, if they're involved in a situation and something bad happens, are they legally responsible? Can you sue the police? And there was a case here that happened a few years ago on the Buckman Bridge where somebody was really driving erratically. It was running people off the road. I think somebody called 911 and they alerted either the FHP or the JSO. And this guy just kept driving erratically, running people off the road. And I think something bad happened on the Buckman. The police never showed up. And I think one of the family members were trying to sue the sheriff's office because they never showed up and stopped this guy from doing what he was doing. And the court dismissed the case. But this is a little different situation that happened downstate. A guy and his cousin were out drinking. And the cousin was driving erratically. And so the cousin was in a different car behind him. So he calls the police. He goes, hey, my cousin's drunk. He's driving erratically. Come get him. He does the right thing and he calls the police. So the police come bring him in and they don't arrest him. It's really strange. They don't arrest him. They bring him in. They give him some tickets. They don't arrest him for DUI for some reason. I don't know what happened there. So what the police do, they call a cab for him at 4:30 in the morning. They know he's drunk. They know he can't take care of himself because he's very intoxicated, but they don't arrest him. They say, we're going to call you a cab. That's the good old days. that won't happen anymore.
Yeah.
I never heard of a police officer doing that. Okay. But anyway, they call a cab. It's 4:30 in the morning. So they set him outside, wait for the cab. The cab will be here. He wanders away from the police station, and he sits down on some train tracks. And, you know, a few minutes later, here comes the train, you know, and he's run over and he's killed. And so the family sued the sheriff's office.
Much different situation.
Yeah, much different situation. Because they had gotten involved, more involved in the case. They had taken on a duty.
That's the legal theory. I think that's interesting. When you take on the fact that they took control of this person, then creates a duty to take care of that person.
Right.
And that's how the law does. Once you enter that sphere of, you know, taking on the duty, then if anything happened, you're responsible.
Yeah.
So the
Boca Raton Police Department was sued in that case, and the court said that case could go forward.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
If you have any questions, make sure to give us a call. The phone number is 904-340-1045.
Yes. We're here to answer some questions. And I'll tell you, if we can't get the answer, we'll find out the answer next week. Typically, that's how we do it around here.
Okay.
Because a lot of stuff, we get real estate questions, we get family law questions. You know, we're personal injury lawyers, but we can reach out and get answers. And of course, if you have a legal question and you want to sit down with an attorney who's an expert in the field, you can always call the Jacksonville Bar Association. And they have an attorney referral service for $50. You can sit down with a lawyer for 30 minutes and talk to him about your legal problem. And these are lawyers that typically charge, they can charge hundreds of, some of these guys, $400, $500, $600 an hour. But you get to talk to them for $50 for a half hour about your legal question. And the good thing about the Jack's Bar Association, they'll find the right lawyer, or they'll try to find you the right lawyer to talk to you.
Okay.
So it's a service of the Jack's Bar. Lawyers donate their time for that, which is a really nice thing.
And yeah, when is that available?
Well, their number is here in Jacksonville, 904 area code, 399-5780. So you just call over there and tell them your situation. They'll try to hook you up with a lawyer. There are lawyers on their list that handle various areas of the law.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And, of course, if you're listening now, you can give us a call, 904-340-1045.
Yep.
Okay. Rentals, you know, a lot of times people rent their houses. You know, you try to always homestead your property because you want to get that tax advantage. And but you know how things are. Sometimes people rent out their homes or rent out part of their homes. And there are Florida statutes or laws on the books that deal with whether or not you get to keep your homestead if you're getting money for renting out your house. Generally, if it's homesteaded on January 1st and you rent it out on January 2nd, you still get the homestead for the entire year. So you could rent your house out. You got the homestead exemption. You're in it on January 1st. January 2nd, you move out and you lease it to your cousin for $1,000 a month. You still get your homestead for that year, but you can't do it 2 years in a row. So you can't like get him out of there, move in on January 1st, and then get somebody else. So you can't do that for 2 years in a row. Anyway, the other question, there was a case that happened up in Fernandina Beach, up in Amelia Island, because the statute says for you to lose your homestead, you have to lease out the entire home. So this guy up in Amelia Island, he has a house up there. He leases out just about. Oh, we'll get back to this.
All right. Okay, and then we'll take your questions after the break. Again, give us a call. Our phone number is 904-340-1045. Welcome back to Consumer Law Hour, sponsored by Fair and Fair. We're taking your phone calls. Right now, we've got Mike from the South Side. He's got a question about insurance claims. Mike?
Hi, how's it going? So I had an insurance claim for Hurricane Matthew, and it was a piece of property that was jointly owned, and the other party hired a public adjuster, and when the claim was paid out, they kind of worked with the public adjuster to get to forge the check, but the public adjuster never got my signature on the contract. So I was told by the state of Florida it's not a valid contract unless they actually have all insured parties, and they dispersed the money once they got the forged signatures into the other party, so the repairs never got done. and I wound up selling the property and lost probably about $50,000. And I kind of wanted to know what possible recourse I might have against the public adjuster, because I know they're bonded in the state of Florida. They have to be.
Yeah. So was the insurance check made payable to both of you?
It was made payable to four parties, the mortgage company, the other party, myself, and the claim, and the public adjuster.
And you never executed it.
I never signed it. I was actually out of the country from the time it was mailed to the time it was cashed.
All right, and, you,
and I've proven.
Go ahead.
Well, I did go to the insurance company and I filed a complaint with the bank, saying it was forged, and the bank said, "We'll investigate it. If indeed it was forged, we can return that to the institution that presented it to us, and you know, get their money back." But that still puts, if that does go through, that still puts me in a loss of about $30,000 on this property I just recently had to sell, because obviously it needed repairs and I couldn't do them.
Okay. Do you have a copy? Did you get a copy of the front and back of the check from the insurance from the bank?
Absolutely, I have.
And it's not, your signature's not on it?
No, somebody put my initials on there, but it's not my signature on the check. 100% sure. Not my handwriting. It was analyzed by local police. They said, yeah, it's obviously not your signature, but...
This is a criminal violation. You're talking about a criminal situation.
I've gone that route, and it is in the hands of FDLE, because I actually filed a complaint against the public adjuster, because they actually managed to get fraudulent bank stamps on there. They had a stamp that said it was endorsed by my bank, and my bank said that my mortgage company. They said no, that's
maybe a civil action.
We don't have any records. And then they had one from an out-of-state bank that said the signatures were verified. And I actually even contacted that bank and showed them the check, and they said no, that's not our stamp. It looks like it.
Chuck brought up a good point. He was talking about you probably have a possible civil complaint against the adjuster.
Well, that's what I wanted. That's what I wanted to know, because I think I can get my insurance claim money back. From what I've been told from the insurance company and the bank that the check was written on, they said it, you know, a forged check is returned to the institution that presents it to them, and it's theirs to deal with. So they can, once the insurance company said, once we get the money returned to us, we'll reissue the check.
I mean, what do you want to happen? I mean, did the mortgage company get their money?
Well, I just recently sold the property, and the property's paid off, but it was sold at quite a bit of loss from what it should have sold for. And I'd like to recover the money I lost.
Did your partner lose the same amount of money that you did?
Well, the person that I own the property with is deceased, and that property, it was an ex-spouse. That property was transferred to my kids. So basically, what's happened here is half of the money will go to my kids, and half of it will go to me. If I could recover what I lost.
I know, but I can assume. What would you have done differently? Would you have hired a different public adjuster to get you more money?
I wouldn't have hired the public adjuster in the first place. But the fact that they forged the check meant that it was about $22,000 for a new roof, and the new roof never got put on the property. So when I had to sell the property, it was basically sold as a distressed property with no roof, and I had to sell it because I couldn't afford to fix it. And if I kept it the way it was just going to get damaged more every time it rained.
Well, where did the $22,000 go if you didn't repair the roof? Who received that money?
The public adjuster got their claim. Matter of fact, they got an additional 5% on the claim for obtaining bank stamps for my ex-spouse, and she received the money and spent it. She was ill at the time, but she never used it to make the repairs on the house.
Oh, I see. So you're out of pocket that half because your spouse took the 22 instead of repairing the roof. She put it in her pocket.
That's correct.
Yeah, so you want to look at that. I mean, maybe was your ex-spouse involved in the forgery, or was it the public adjuster?
The public adjuster offered to her to get, they told her that for an extra 5% of the claim, they would get stamps on it saying the signatures were verified.
Wow.
Then they in turn deposited into their account. And
fiduciary duty, man.
Yeah, there's something going on there between the adjuster and your former spouse. I kind of see what's happening, but you're out of pocket. I mean, you didn't sign it. I mean,
yes. So the forgery point is in the hands of FDLE, but the fact that Florida law, and I talked to the agency that regulates public adjusters, and I'll tell you. tell your listeners, if you're thinking about a public adjuster, go see a lawyer first like you guys, because they'll get much better results. I've had friends that have done that. So I give you a little free promotion there, because that is way better than a public adjuster. They're not the – some of them are not the greatest people in the world. But since they never got my signature on the contract, they had no right to enter into it. And since they got – the fact that they didn't get my signature, they basically entered into a contract with one party, which is against Florida law, and that allowed all the rest of this to happen. So that's – I'm wondering if that's the way it would be seen in court, and if I have any recourse, because, you know, I – $30,000 is a lot of money to lose.
That's a lot. I mean, it's a lot. And you've got your, but you've got the FDLE. Now, the FDLE, they can do a criminal investigation. I guess part of the criminal investigation can require, I don't know if they're going to get you your money back. You may have to file a civil complaint against the insurance company and or your ex-spouse. I mean, she was probably complicit with the insurance company. I mean, she knew that was not your signature. I mean, do you have an issue with that?
Yeah, I do, but person's gone, and there was no money to nothing to be had from. But the insurance company, I believe they'll get the $20,000 for the claim back, and then that can be that. Since the house is sold, the mortgage company will endorse that over to me, and I'll split that with my kids, because it would be half theirs.
Mm-hmm.
But the additional $30,000 I lost on the sale of the house, because it had to be sold as a distressed property, I'm wondering if I, you know. Public adjusters are bonded, so I didn't know if there's a way to actually say, look, you entered into a contract without both signatures, and that's fact. I mean, the contract they presented to the insurance company did not have both signatures. I kind of thought the insurance company should have known better, but you know, they put their name on the check when they issued it out, and it was not a valid contract.
Yeah, so. There was probably something on the back. They probably consider that a valid signature. I mean,
on the contract. Insurance company for the claim that they.
Right. There was no anybody's forged your signature on the contract?
No. Okay. No, my name was not on the contract.
All right. Well, then.
And when I did ask the insurance company about that, after speaking with the Florida regulator, who she told me, she said, Mr. Jones, they don't have a valid contract because you didn't sign it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it was, I called the insurance company and said, well, when you reissue these checks, are you going to take their name off? They said, well, they have a contract. I said, well, it's not valid because I didn't sign it. And they said, well, we get contracts like this all the time that only one party signs. I said, well,
that's not correct.
Look at the Florida statute says all insured parties have to sign it, or they have to have a power of attorney or affidavit stating why they don't need the signature. And none of that was provided to the insurance company.
Well, I mean, you know, we don't do, I mean, we can't handle a criminal situation, but we handle civil cases. If you're interested in talking to us further about it, you can leave your number with Scott. I have an attorney in my office that handles first party claims, and he can talk to you about it. I guess he dropped off, but hello? Okay, Mike.
All right.
Well, he can call back and we can give him a number, or we can talk to him.
Yeah, the
Monday.
Number is 904-340-1045 if you want to keep calling. It looks like right now we have another call from Robert in Orange Park, and he has a question about who inherits property. Robert, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Hey, Robert.
Hey, how you doing?
Sure. Go ahead.
My wife and I have been married about 15 years. We both had a previous marriage with children, and we're preparing a will, and we've got everything ironed out and everything ready to go. But our question is, if one of us die at this point, we still have about 7 years on the mortgage. We would like each of our equity to go to our children. How does that need to be set up in a will? What steps do I need to take?
Okay, I've got somebody that can talk to you about it. I'll give you my. I'm a personal injury lawyer, as you know, but generally, you don't have a will right now.
No, sir.
Neither of you have a will.
No, sir.
Okay, so if God forbid, if you were both to die at the same time, I mean, here's what could happen. If you were to die first, I don't want to get into it because if you did, of course, then it would go to your wife. I think your wife would get it, the homestead, and then she could do whatever she wanted with it. She could keep it, give it to her kids, and not give your kids anything. And I think vice versa.
Okay.
So could, if you want your kid,
or if he has a will, could he not give his share to his kids now?
And well, they could have a joint will.
They could have a joint will.
But what could happen is, and I'm not a state lawyer, but I'm telling you here what could happen. Let's say you both have wills that say when y'all die, it goes to y'all's kids equally.
Right.
If you predecease your wife, then she could change her will and give it all to her children.
Yeah, but
I don't know if there's any way to protect. To make sure that it's going to be distributed equally. But what I can do is...
Or maybe if he writes a will now for himself.
But you can always change a will.
Yeah, but he writes it for him, for his share.
To go to his kids.
To go to his kids.
Yeah, that way. Yeah, yeah that way. Yeah, that way. And her share goes to her kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. There's a way to do that. There's a way
to be better than a joint will?
Yeah, you can't do a joint will. You got each hand. I think Chuck solved the problem. I was concerned about somebody predeceasing the other spouse and then that person doing something.
Yeah, that's
their
different.
Will.
But I think if you write a will today, let's say, then you could probably, we couldn't give you the exact language. You'd want to speak with a lawyer that handles this day in and day out, but he would be able to create some language in there that would protect you and do what you want.
Robert, if you leave your phone number, I can call you on Monday and give you the name of a person that can help you with that.
Okay, I can do that.
Yeah, I got a guy who does it all the time, and he can advise you over the phone how to do it. He's a probate lawyer, and he does wills every day. But there's a way to do that. I was just concerned about people changing wills. Oh, yeah, I'll give your half, or I'll give half to your kids, and then all of a sudden, God forbid, something happens to you, and then they change the will. But there's a way to do it. But leave your phone number, and I'll have somebody contact you.
I just got a text from a listener who said you could put into a trust too, which may be a way to making the kids can be the beneficiaries of that equally or something.
Okay.
And keep those calls coming. The phone number is 904-340-1045. Now we have Chris from St. Augustine. He has a question about lawsuits and umbrella policies.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, man.
Yes, I just wanted to find out how if they I have a personal injury lawsuit going on, and I was just wondering if the other side does not have an umbrella policy, how does that affect my outcome?
Okay, it depends because they have
depends on your damages.
They
really.
They have an underlying policy, but no umbrella, right?
Not exactly sure.
Do you know that because the umbrella policy is typically written by a different insurance company? So if they've got State Farm, for instance, or Geico for their underlying coverage, typically they wouldn't have Geico or State Farm for the umbrella. A lot of times it's with a different company. How do you know they don't have an umbrella?
Well, I asked my attorney, and they said they didn't have one.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't know if I could say it's one of your guys, and I love you guys.
Right. Well, I mean, we'll have to talk to the lawyer about it, but typically... There's a way to investigate that, and I don't want to get into details of your case, but that's why a lot of people buy uninsured motorist coverage.
Yes.
Because it covers you when the policy for the at-fault driver is not enough money. We wish everybody had umbrellas, but I'll tell you, Chris, if you were to leave your phone, I don't want to get into the details of your case.
Yeah.
Leave your phone number, and Monday I'll check into it.
Okay.
Sounds great. I'll call you on Monday, and we'll figure it out.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling in.
Okay. All right, we're heading into a break, but give us a call at 904-340-1045. We'll keep answering your questions. You're listening to Consumer Law Hour, and we have a caller right now. We've got Lisa in St. Augustine. She's got a follow-up question to having a will when she's divorced and remarried. Lisa?
Hello, Lisa.
Yes, hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good.
Good.
How can we help you?
Yeah, my question was, my husband and I are remarried 13 years. We both have kids. He has three kids. I have two kids. And we don't have a will. Shame on us. But if one of us would pass away, obviously, you know, if I would pass away, he would want to keep everything we have for himself. And so I wouldn't know, how would you provide for my children until he would pass, you know, or vice versa.
Right,
you know,
right.
Because, yeah, he wants to keep the house and everything that we have, or me, you know, and then when I would pass, then it would be distributed. But is that something you have to put specific in your will?
I mean, in that scenario, you really want to have wills
and guardians. And
yeah, you want to, because are you concerned that, God forbid, you pass away first, he gets the house and everything, and then he just does what he wants with it, right?
Well, it's not that I don't trust my husband. If I told him, hey, you need to divvy this up, you know, with my kids here, because this is my house, too, you know, he probably would. I mean, you know, you never know what's going to happen once you pass.
That's
you know?
Exactly. But, I mean, we've dealt with these scenarios. I've heard of scenarios like this before where the person inherits, you know, the surviving spouse maybe gets remarried or, you know, something else happens. And then, of course, everything's off the table at that point. So,
so in the will, we would say, like, if he passes away first, then when I pass away, everything gets divvied up between our children. Is that, like, how you specifically do it?
I'm not an estate attorney, but I know someone who can help you do that. He can talk to you on the phone and tell you the best way to do it. So if you would just leave me your phone number on Monday morning, I'll call you and give you his number, and you can talk to him on the phone about it. But, yeah, that's something you really need to, especially when you have children from different marriages. It makes it more difficult.
Yeah.
If you and your husband were married and all the kids were just from y'all, I mean, it'd be a little easier. But still, things can still happen. That's why you want a will and you want to talk to a probate lawyer and make sure you're protected and your wishes and what you want to happen to your properties are done that way.
Okay. All right. Well, sure. Thank you.
Sound good. Thanks, Lisa. So we got some probate work to do on Monday, Chuck. But I'll tell you, I want to get back to what we were talking about, the rental, like the homestead. When whether or not you rent your house out, can this tax collector take away your homestead status and, you know, charge you more property taxes? Well, there is a case, you know, Florida statute says as long as, you know, as long as you don't lease out the entire house, you get the homestead. But there was a case up in Fernandina. Well, we're out of luck. We'll talk about it next week.
Thanks for listening
get into that.
Thanks for listening to Consumer Law Hour on WOKV.
If anybody has a question about this homestead issue and you're renting out your house, call me at the office and I'll tell you what the case said.
904-626-7080, right?
Yep.
Right. Thanks for listening.